date is Thursday, March 20th, 2014. Well, we're starting a little bit late, but not bad considering how it could have been. So thank you, those who expected to start earlier, for accommodating the schedule. We're going to begin with Senate File 1975, Travel Abroad, Study Programs, Program Requirements, and I will turn the gavel over to Senator Miller. Oh, and let the record reflect there has been a quorum.
Bonoff, Senate File 1975.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It really is an honor to be able to present the legislation before you. You know, every now and then something will happen that just touches you and you want to do something about it, and that's the case with regard to this legislation. So over the interim, I was contacted separately by two different women, Cheryl Hill and Elizabeth Brenner, and I'm actually joined today by Elizabeth Brenner, and Cheryl Hill is out of the country, and she feels very badly that she wasn't able to be with us today. These two women went through the tragic experience of losing a child while on a study abroad trip. As a mom, I can only imagine the pain and grief that that has caused and how life is completely altered from that experience. So in the aftermath to these tragedies, the mothers began investigating study abroad programs. They found little information and were even shunned by those they turned to for assistance. This bill is an attempt to create a strong culture of reporting accidents, illnesses, sexual assaults, and deaths that occur during a study abroad trip. So members, you know, as a legislator, we listen to stories that do rip our hearts and have us want to do something, and we have to balance that with our responsibility to act in an objective, policy-driven way. And so this bill before you does not do everything, and in fact, it probably doesn't even do as much as I would have liked, but the lens that we look through is we understand how important study abroad programs are for our young people. We know what a difference it makes on those young people who have that opportunity. And in fact, they become our ambassadors all over the world. And so it's actually of great value to not just our students, but to our nation as well. And so we, and I will say Representative Seltzer is my partner in this. Representative Seltzer is Ms. Brenner's a representative, just a little bit over neighborhoods from mine. But as we looked at how we might address this, we wanted to focus on bringing transparency to problems, giving parents and students information that would be key signals that perhaps a program isn't the right program for them, without putting in place the state being an overseer of these programs or the state mandating limitations to these programs. We just wanted to be able to use their commitment and their tragedy to allow these women to make a difference so that we keep our students safe. So we convened stakeholders from other private schools and universities, from the University of Minnesota, in an attempt to walk that balance. So what you have before you is a delete all. We had several revisions. Every time we would propose something, then we'd hear, well, that's not workable. And so what you have before you is a delete all. That is a beginning. That's the A4. Members have the A4.
All right, members, we have the A4 in our packets. Senator Bonoff moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Subdivision 2 requires reporting by post-secondary institutions of the programs that are offered at their schools. They're required to report deaths that occur during program participation, accidents and illnesses that occur during program participation, and these may be supplemented by a brief explanatory statement. Also, they must report on whether the program complies with health and safety standards set by the Forum on Education Abroad. When we met with the University of Minnesota, and they represented the voice of study abroad professionals all over the state, they talked about the Forum on Education Abroad as being a clearinghouse of standards, and that those who belong to that have already committed to be held to the highest standards. There is, you'll probably hear from my testifier that there is some concern that that's not enough, but again, that's what's in the bill. Subdivision 3 requires the Office of Higher Ed to publish the report, so after the universities and institutions make the reports, it requires the Office of Higher Ed to publish those reports online and to be done in a manner that facilitates identifying information related to a particular post-secondary institution. And then the office is also requested to publish the best available information by country on sexual assaults and other criminal acts affecting study abroad program participants from any state or country during program participation. And this one was particularly challenging. We have heard that there are certain countries where sexual assaults are more common, but if we had the programs report that information by each institution, there was some concern that confidentiality would be compromised. And so if there was only one student in a particular country and that institution reported that there was an incident in that country, that student's privacy could be violated. And so the way that it's written in the bill simply states that the best available information, and we actually believe that the best available information will most likely come from the Forum on Education Abroad's data, and that was the thinking on that. Subdivision 4 requires the post-secondary institution to include a link to this website in program materials. The Section 2 is the assessment of the regulation. It requests OHE using existing budget and staff to assess what the appropriate state regulation of post-secondary study abroad programs is. And this assessment must be based on balancing student health and safety while not limiting opportunity. And again, by putting this request for a report, we're sending the signal that we're not certain this bill does all that we needed to do, and we're asking the professionals to do some due diligence and come back to us with how we might take this in an effort to make sure we're doing the most that we can. The biggest challenge we have is that many of the institutions give credit to programs that aren't their programs. So, for example, IES is a study abroad program that could be offered at many institutions, but the institution doesn't have control over that program. So we could not regulate programs that were offered in other states that our Minnesota students can access. We hope this report will identify avenues for us to implement a full reporting mechanism by all the programs that are available to our Minnesota students. And so with that, Mr. Chair, it is really an honor and a privilege to introduce Ms. Brenner to you and allow her to share her story and to share her journey and to talk about the organization that they have founded based on this experience.
Ms. Brenner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Elizabeth Brenner.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Am I okay?
You're good to go.
Yes, all right. First of all, I just, before I begin, I want to say thank you to all of you for this opportunity to speak, but a special thanks to Senator Terry Bonoff. You listened. And took in Thomas's story and Tyler's story and made these stories her own. And now I have to tell you, I don't want to live this life. This is very hard, but I have to. She took this on as a choice, and in my opinion, that makes her a hero, and I am stronger for her courage. So, special thanks to you.
Thank
you. And to everyone here today. I'm a little bit nervous, so I hope you'll bear with me. On September 22, 2011, my 20-year-old son, Thomas Plotkin, died during his study abroad. Thomas was an econ major interested in sustainable development. He was looking for a cultural immersion, and he knew he would need high-quality guides. 1 month after Thomas's semester abroad began, he slipped off a 5 to 6 foot wide rain-slicked trail and fell 262 feet, the equivalent of a 24-story building. He fell into a Class 5 river at flood stage. That river runs into the Ganges and then into the Bay of Bengal. His body was never found. In the days after Thomas's death, I imagined him as study abroad's first death. In the weeks after my child's death, I imagined him as study abroad's last death. In the months and years since my child's death, there have been other deaths, and I have come to understand that the student travel industry is unregulated, growing, and controlled by complex competing interests. Thanks to the internet, families of the dead gather. In our community, we discover stories that are eerily similar. Talented sons and daughters, the promise of an education, instead, sudden, catastrophic death, falls, drownings, vehicular accidents, untreated health problems, altitude sickness, murder, and more. 1 week at most, our children become yesterday's news. Schools investigate themselves or not. Families have difficulty getting accurate information, not to mention the difficulty of getting a body home. In trying to understand the landscape of study abroad, bereaved families may contact federal authorities, and they will be disappointed. Even though the Department of State, Education, and Defense house programs promoting study abroad, our nation's leaders will maintain that counting the dead and injured students is not within their scope. Submitting FOIA requests will not help the family gain information. After Thomas's death, via the internet, I found the Forum on Education Abroad. My sister, a University of Minnesota-trained epidemiologist, engaged in a series of emails with the president, Brian Whalen. His response: we know from member surveys that student safety is top priority. Whalen then went on to claim his organization as standard bearer for the industry. Yet in spite of his organization's decade-plus run at being standard bearer, he could tell us nothing about death or injury rates during study abroad. So, using the internet, parents of the dead have been collecting their own data. And I want to give particular credit to Roz Thackerdine. She lives in upstate New York. Her son Ravi died in 2012. She has worked relentlessly. Once she identifies a family, she calls the family to verify information and to tell them that they are not alone. And I want you to see this. This binder represents some of her work. About half of this are deaths. The other half, injury, assault, or deaths related to study abroad, where it might be a student from another country or a young teacher from another country. I just have to say I am in awe of her, that she, in spite of her grief, that she's gotten this much done, and it hasn't even been 2 years. One case I want to highlight, and for very particular reasons, is what happened in 1996, India semester at sea. The school enlisted local buses to transport students to their destination. One of the buses rolled off a narrow, unlit nighttime road, and 7 people died, including 4 American students. The fact of simultaneous deaths commanded national attention. And so in 2000, those families, the semester at Sea Parents, testified before Congress. I tell you this because I want you to understand that the federal government has been aware that there are problems with study abroad. After the semester at Sea Parents testified, J. Taylor Buckley of USA Today called study abroad a quiet, cliquish, century-old corner of the American college scene, a corner which would imminently surpass 100,000 students per year. He said seminars on liability and risk management that once begged for audiences are now priority at study abroad conventions. I wonder about these conventions. What were they meant to accomplish? In less than two decades, study abroad tripled in size, and still there is no count in accountability. But there's money. Depending upon who calculates what, I'm guessing north of $2 billion per year. Hillary Clinton calls study abroad a growth sector for our nation. Yet, money aside, study abroad is fast growing for other reasons, too. After 9/11, we all woke up. But with regard to American students, a very particular vision emerged. In 2005, Congress formed the Commission on the Abraham Lincoln Study Abroad Fellowship Program. Although that bill died in committee, it did not die before issuing its final report. The report opens with this thrice reiterated line, "What nations don't know can hurt them." The Commission's objective, 1 million American students annually studying abroad by 2017. The Commission maintained study abroad as key to a student's global competence and went on to claim students as crucial to our national security and domestic prosperity. It is to this Commission that the University of Minnesota swore a goal of 50% of all undergraduates participating in study abroad by 2015. Yet, the Commission report never once mentions student safety. Hoping to pass the Lincoln program in 2006, Condoleezza Rice, as Secretary of State, spoke to a national gathering of university presidents. "Every American abroad is an ambassador for our nation, an individual who represents the principles of democracy. We must work together to expand study abroad programs." Under Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, in 2010, the State Department inaugurated the 100,000 Strong Initiative. In a personal letter that she wrote to Foreign President Brian Whelan, Clinton implored him that universities must dramatically increase the number of Americans studying in China, minimally 100,000 over the next 3 years, Latin America, another 100,000 by 2020, and Passport to India, another State Department initiative. Last summer, the forum's critical incident database went live. There was a lot of fanfare preceding the CID debut, and I said to myself, finally, we will have numbers. But it turns out that the forum's database is open only to members, as in dues-paying schools, and their reporting is voluntary, and their database does not consider historic deaths, in other words, Ravi's, Thomas's, Tyler's deaths won't count. The forum's annual convention will be held the first week in April this year in San Diego. 63 panels, and two of them will discuss student safety, one of them to review the forum's critical incident database. Brian Whelan will appear on one of the panels, though not on either of the safety panels. He will be on a panel with two government representatives, one from the State Department and one from Education USA. Their topic? Education abroad and U.S. foreign policy goals. Here's the tagline. The U.S. Department of State considers education abroad a priority directly related to our country's foreign policy goals. Even Mrs. Obama has made the case for student travel programs, recently telling young people, when you study abroad, you are making America stronger. As human beings, we love. We love our families, especially our children. As Americans, we love freedom. We promote accessible, accurate information as key to freedom. And we teach our young that accessible, accurate information is essential to well-reasoned decision-making. Should our sons and daughters as students not have the right to educated choice? I sent my child on study abroad. We both believed we were doing something good and true. 3 days after Thomas disappeared, I learned he was his school's 12th death. I never imagined I was sending my child on secret study abroad. In the aftermath of Thomas's death, sometimes it feels like our children as students have been laid out on a large table. And at this table are two chairs. One chair is occupied by the student travel industry. One chair is occupied by the federal government. Both chairs work at an accelerated pace. After all, the world is changing, and so they must agree on how many, how much, where, and how soon. Nowhere at that table are the families of the dead. Nowhere at this table are the dead themselves, whose stories should be lessons, light, beacons to protect future students. Nowhere at this table are advocates for the humanity that binds us all. Our students deserve basic protections. Families of the dead are not asking for travel programs to be shuttered. We remember how much our children believed, and we believe too, or we would not have sent them. But I want to caution you to call our sons and daughters ambassadors. It's disingenuous. Ambassadors are trained, and if they die, they are counted. I still believe that people are mostly good. If we err, it is that we spend too much time in what I call the middling, living life as it is, not looking too deeply. If we look too deeply, it means taking risk of discovery, and if you have to discover something, then it means you have to do something about it. I really want to go back to that life before Thomas died, when I didn't know what I know now. But I also have a hunch. If all of us make it to that old age plateau where we look back at the life lived, what we will wish for is the one time we could have made a difference. To those of you who work in higher ed, especially to those of you who work at U of M with your strong and influential study abroad program, I guess some of you will probably be going to the Forum's convention in San Diego. I hope you will leave your middling life and go forth as a messenger. Challenge the Forum. Challenge Whalum. Challenge State. As long as the student travel industry rushes our children into their global future, it builds on bones of the dead. And what will be built will be a machine. It will not be a living, breathing human being with a beating heart that can love and also be shattered. We need a third chair at that table, a third chair that demands truth. Student travel programs, old data, new data, deaths, injuries, sexual assaults, robberies, collected, analyzed through the lens of many, many disciplines. Only then, will our children as students be empowered decision makers, and to be empowered always has been and always will be the best education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brenner, for your testimony. We're certainly sorry for your loss. Sympathies, I think, from the entire committee are with you and your family. Members, any questions for Ms. Brenner? No? Okay. Thank you again so much. We have a couple other testifiers on
yes,
the list.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, I just want to extend my heartfelt thanks for Ms. Brenner having the courage to come before the committee today and speak so eloquently. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. Right. If the looks like we have two more testifiers, if you'd like to come forward, you can both come forward. Just please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Greg, hello.
Hi.
Stacy, Jody, whoever wants to go first.
I'm Jody Malmgren.
Wonderful. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to extend my thanks to Senator Bonoff for inviting me to testify today. Thank you. So I am the Director of International and Off-Campus Study for St. Olaf College. St. Olaf sends about 70 to 75% of our students abroad or off-campus during their 4 years of study with us. And collectively, the Minnesota private colleges send about 50% of the students who study abroad each year from the state of Minnesota. I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak today on behalf of many of my colleagues in the field of education abroad. They have collectively spent a lot of time learning about this legislation and sharing their feedback with Senator Bonoff, either directly or indirectly. I want to extend a special acknowledgement to Ms. Brenner. I had the honor to meet her today before the hearing began, and I want to acknowledge her courage in facing a personal tragedy and for her efforts to bring attention to an issue that is near and dear to my heart, which is the safety of students abroad. My professional life is dedicated to student learning and to student safety abroad. As a field, our colleagues go to great lengths to orient students both before and after, before departure and upon arrival in their country of study. We work to help them be aware of risks that may occur. We insure them in the event of illness or injury, and we prepare their group leaders to support them while they're abroad. We cannot guarantee a risk-free world any more than we can guarantee a risk-free campus. But our goal is to educate students and to help them explore the world in as safe and facilitated a way as possible. Thank you to Senator Bonoff, her fellow legislators, the Senate Council, and their staffs for their willingness to listen to our perspectives and to adapt the legislation over these last weeks to ensure that the legislation doesn't unintentionally limit the opportunity of students to study abroad. I'm particularly pleased with the inclusion of a reference to our professional standards, as in my opinion, it is these best practices that best protect students abroad in a way that reporting alone cannot do. I'm certain that St. Olaf can comply with the reporting requirements, and I am supportive of the transparency that this bill would provide. I'm hopeful that my colleagues in colleges, universities, and community colleges around the state will also be able to comply with this legislation. St. Olaf is eager to be helpful to the Office of Higher Education as it compiles the data and presents it in the most effective way possible so that students and families have information that they have not previously had. We are also hopeful to be supportive to them in their reporting that is, in their further research that is requested in Section 2 of the legislation. Thank you very much for your for the opportunity to be here today, and I will welcome questions, but I suspect that we should have Stacy Santier also testify first.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I just want to say one thing to Jody, is that when I, along with Senator Claussen, toured our 21 colleges and campuses, one of them was St. Olaf, and I spoke to your president about the potential of doing this legislation, and he was very welcoming and receptive, and then I actually followed up with a call to make sure he really meant it. He wasn't just being polite, and so I thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Members, any questions? If not, we'll proceed.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Stacy Santier, and I'm the Director of International Health, Safety, and Compliance at the University of Minnesota. I apologize, I have a cold. If my voice cuts out, I'll just clear my throat, and hopefully I'll be back. I do also want to thank Elizabeth Brenner for her touching and very courageous testimony. I've known Elizabeth for a couple of years now, and she just continues to amaze me with her ability to put what I can't even put into words, into wonderful, eloquent words. So thank you for that, Elizabeth. And second, thank you, Senator Bonoff, for inviting me to be part of this discussion today. I think many people probably have heard about the University of Minnesota and our tie to education abroad. And so just a little bit of background information for you about the university. We are third in the nation in the number of study abroad students. Part of that comes from being one of the largest U.S. institutions. We're also at the top of the Big Ten, so we are a big education abroad school. We are known nationally as a model in the area of health and safety and security of our students who go abroad. And that is really one of our priorities, and it's something that we invested in a long time ago and put a lot of resources and a lot of effort towards not just increasing the number of students, but doing so in a way that is safe and supports the students' health. We are one of only a few universities, I think we're about 30 now in the nation, who have a position like mine, fully dedicated to international health, safety, and compliance. And so we're very, very proud of that, and I can't take any credit for that, but I think it was a great decision to create that position. We take a lot of steps, as Jody referenced, and I just want to give a couple of examples of how the University of Minnesota does this, so you have a little bit of context. We work with our students. We provide a comprehensive international travel, health, safety, and security insurance coverage for all of our students who travel abroad. We carefully review and select all of our partners or affiliates. As you know, the University of Minnesota can't possibly support thousands of students abroad on our own, and so we do this a lot through partnerships with other institutions, foreign universities, as well as what we call third-party providers. And what's really important is to make sure that those choices are good choices and that we review those folks. We have very strong emergency communications and contingency plans, 24-hour support for our students both in the local country and in the U.S., incident reporting, as well as an incident database. And so we do actually track incidents by type, by country, and other types of details. We have a mandatory health and safety orientation for students pre-departure while they're abroad. We also have reentry activities, as Jody referenced. We have specific advising pre-departure for students with pre-existing health conditions, GLBT students, women, all the different types of groups who might have very unique health and safety concerns. The University of Minnesota is also a member of the Forum on Education Abroad, which you heard a little bit about today. The Forum is a 501c3, it's a nonprofit, and it's federally recognized by the U.S. Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission as the standard-setting body. The Forum standards, which I understand you have a copy of, are referenced in the legislation, and as Jody mentioned, they go a lot further than just requiring reporting. Standard 8, which is on page 12 of the document that you have, is focused specifically on health and safety, and it is a huge goal for Forum members as well as the Forum to continue to raise the bar in the nation. As Elizabeth mentioned, there are people who don't do this right. That is an honest truth. But the Forum and those of us who do think we do it right are working hard to bring everyone up to the same level. The University of Minnesota staff, including myself, met with Senator Bonhoeff back in November to discuss initial plans. And in late January, a group from the Minnesota Study Abroad Professionals, which we call in short MSAP, came together to really take a concerted and coordinated discussion so that we weren't having 22, 23, 24 institutions knocking on their door. And we participated in this group, the University of Minnesota. We provided feedback. We've really enjoyed the conversation. The University of Minnesota can comply with this legislation with very little change and very little cost because of the infrastructure and the incident database that we have in place. Again, I want to thank Senator Bonhoeff and others for seeking input and having this be a discussion and working collaboratively with us on this bill. So thank you.
Ms. Santier, thank you so much for your testimony. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I also want to thank Ms. Santier because it was really Ms. Santier's leadership that allowed us to get the information from all the colleges and the universities, and the way that the university has approached health and safety of our students and their commitment to it paved the way for us to make progress on the legislation.
Wonderful. All right. No questions from members. Is there? We don't have any other testifiers on the list. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate File 1975? Seeing none, Senator Bonhoeff moves that Senate File 1975 voted to be passed and referred to the Senate floor as amended. Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. All right, as Senator Bonhoff makes her way back, we have an overview for the successful transfer of credits. Those folks want to come forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Brien and Ms. Milne. Welcome to the committee. Whoever's going first, please introduce yourself, and we're anxious to hear a testimony.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to come here today and talk about the smart transfer plan with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities System. My name is John O'Brien. I'm the Senior Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs with MinSCU, and I'll let Linda introduce herself.
And I'm Linda Milne. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at MinSCU.
So in the interest of time, I think I'll just start and give members and Chair Bonhoff an abbreviated version of a presentation that I actually gave yesterday to the Board of Trustees, who was also quite interested in the issue of transfer and the progress made on the smart transfer plan. So with your permission, I'll begin.
Please do, and I just want you to know my staff watched the presentation, Mr. Kornecki, so...
Thank you.
Listen. Thank you.
In 2010, the system, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, was directed to develop a transfer plan and then to implement and report on that plan through 2014. Linda and I are here today to reassure you that we have completed all legislative directives, that we have seen a marked improvement in transfer, and that we are moving forward with compelling new initiatives that will produce strong results in the years ahead. Probably goes without saying, but transfer is a top priority, and I can't emphasize that enough. It's actually the reason the system was formed. The MinSCU Board of Trustees, charged by you 2 decades ago to ensure transferability of credits, has made transfer a top priority. And as I mentioned, we just were asked to present yesterday to the Board of Trustees. In 2010, transfer was identified as a concern from several directions. First of all, a survey of students that was conducted with our support by the Minnesota State College Student Association and the Minnesota State University Student Association. Secondly, by an internal audit on transfer, and thirdly, by a legislative audit. The issues raised in these investigations led to legislative actions. The Higher Ed Bill of 2010, in the same year, required us to create a plan to address transfer concerns and to report on progress made through 2014, this year. Focus areas included communication and training, publishing consistent information for students on our websites, tracking information, and just plain continuing to improve transfer. In response to the 2010 reports and mandates, we brought together key stakeholders from throughout the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system to advise on the creation of our plan. College and university transfer experts, chief academic officers, deans, faculty, and students all weighed in on what came to be known as the SMART Transfer Plan, which is structured around the very areas required by the legislation. This plan has been fully implemented, and we're here today to share the data that we were required to report on as well as part of the legislative mandate. In short, our data shows solid results. This chart shows that over the past 15 years, efforts to improve transfer have been unceasing, and the number of transfer students has soared. This chart shows the number up 78% over the years from left to right. Fully 38% of all associates and 48% of all baccalaureate degrees are awarded to students who attended more than one college or university in the MinSCU system. So there's a lot of good data in a very small font size here. I think what I'll do with these 2 pies worth of data is to try to just call out 3 things that I think are notable. First of all, there are 33,000 transfer students in the MinSCU system, a remarkable number. Secondly, The system may have been designed with transfer from within Minsku in mind, transfer from one Minsku institution to another. That's what the chart on the left shows. But fully 40% of transfers from outside the system, as indicated by the pie on the right-hand side. The biggest surprise to me, because I tend to think of transfer as a topic as being about transferring from a two-year to a four-year university. In fact, if you look at both of these graphs, you can see that the majority of transfer is actually transfer to our two-year institutions. The blue and red portions that make up the majority of both pies represent transfer to colleges. Progress is clear from the fact that our aggregate data shown in this chart, these two charts, shows more Minsku students are seeing more credits accepted in transfer. Note the chart on the left. The number of students transferring to state colleges has increased by 38% between 2008 and 2013, while the number of students transferring to state universities has increased by 23%. Over the same period, the acceptance of credits at our colleges has increased by 42%, and the number of credits transferred to state universities has increased by almost 36%. We know, too, that the average number of credits transferred per student, that's the chart on the right, has increased as well. At our universities, the average number of credits transferred per student has increased from 48 to 53 over a five-year period, an increase of one or two courses per student. At our colleges, students successfully transfer about 27 credits. That's nearly a full year of academic work. Along with the evidence provided by our transfer data, there's further evidence that we're making marked progress. The 2010 survey that I mentioned earlier as one of the three investigations done on transfer reported that there was work to be done. We replicated that survey in 2013, and the results of that survey found several important areas students reporting better experience in. More positive ratings, more positive comments about transfer were the comments and ratings that characterized the survey. You'll note a 10-point increase in overall satisfaction with the transfer experience since 2010, as well as significant improvement in other areas as well. We're happy with these results, but we're hardly satisfied. While 100% satisfaction with transfer is probably not realistic, we can and will do better. For example, we know that advising is critical to success in transfer, but we also know that too many students still don't connect regularly with an advisor. We know that awareness of transfer and awareness of the appeals process is still not widespread in spite of efforts we've made in this area. Although not all transfer appeals have merit, they are successful most of the time. 85% who file an appeal get all or some of the disputed transfer credits approved, which is why we've been trying to point more people to those appeals processes. I can't stress enough that continuous improvement is our absolute priority. We've done a lot, but we're already looking ahead to what we can do next in this area. Here are some of our plans. First of all, to improve policies, procedures, and practices, to create new system-level committee that will handle appeals, again, making the appeals process more visible and easier to use for students. And these are just the appeals that aren't already resolved on appeals on campuses. To integrate smart transfer plan provisions into policy and procedure so that they'll continue well beyond 2014. To review and improve all seven of our transfer policies. To continue to review what other states are doing and to consider deploying appropriate best practices here in Minnesota. And then again, transfer is all about information and correct information. And to address this, we plan to create a new system-wide student web portal to provide consistent information and resources to our students, to execute more articulation agreements, and to use the DARS system and its new update transferology to improve transfer. I'd like to focus in on just one of those areas as probably the most exciting development, because this is a software update that actually is rolled out at the end of this month. So I'd like to take some time to introduce you to a product called Transferology. We gave the student survey, as I mentioned, in 2010. We replicated again in 2013, and I reported on those results. My strong guess is that when we give the survey again in 2015, we're going to see significant improvement, and I think the reason will be transferology. When we look ahead at what's changed, we've used a product like this for a long time. We've used the USelect product for 10 years, an online transfer tool based on a database called DARS. In the last few years, the college and university system has coded over 300,000 course equivalencies into the DARS system. Now, the latest evolution of this product, USelect, is called Transferology, and we believe it'll make a big difference for students. While the previous product had an awful lot of information in it, it was unnecessarily complicated, hard to use, and therefore not surprisingly underused by our students. Transferology is a dramatically improved, student-friendly transfer tool that makes it possible for students to see at a glance which of their courses will transfer and how they'll transfer. If a student from Itasca Community College, for example, knows that she wants to transfer to Anoka-Ramsey Community College, Transferology will map out how each course taken will transfer. This screen shows 9 of the 300,000 course equivalencies defined in the DARS system. Prior to spring of 2013, a student who wanted to see how a package of courses would transfer would have to enter each course into the system manually. Now a student can push a single button and upload their entire transcript into the system. This is a monumental change and one that will dramatically change student planning for transfer. Problems with transfer are usually problems with planning, and this is a fantastic tool to help with that. With Transferology, if a student doesn't know where he wants to transfer, he can upload his entire transfer to see what his best options are. Here a student can instantly see which MinSKU institutions have more defined course equivalencies for him or her. Student can search for a transfer match and filter by distance from home, by tuition cost, or by college or university size, but then see which university or college is going to be a better transfer match for them. A student can explore more when they see the results of this search. They can click an institution to request admissions information from the college or university, and they can drill down and see underneath the overall percentage to see exactly what courses will transfer into specific majors. The key to transfer is getting students the best information possible. Advising is one way, and it's a critical way. But a tool like this is a remarkable game changer for informing students and keeping them aware of transfer possibilities. Conversely, transfer problems typically result when a student believes a course will transfer, only to discover later that it doesn't. This tool can simply solve that problem because a student can test to see, will this course be equivalent to a course at another institution? That's the short version, and I have more slides, and I have more talking to be done. It's an occupational hazard, but at this point, I think I'll pause and invite questions or discussion or further testimony.
Well, thank you. That's a pretty interesting tool that you showed us. That's wonderful. But do you have testimony also?
No, I have no additional testimony.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very good. So we can ask questions. Good. So I have questions, but else members, do you want to anyone want to start? Yep, Senator Pratt.
I'll start. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. O'Brien, as you were going through this, what were the key differences? I noticed even on your example that there was a difference in transfer rate between Moorhead and St. Cloud. And so typically, what are the differences that cause those matches or non-matches between what seem to be fairly similar options?
And this is where Linda Milne comes in, Chair Bonhoeff and Senator.
Senator Pratt, Chair Bonhoeff, members. The differences you saw usually arise in the areas of the major, of a student's major. One of the big accomplishments over the past 4 years since the legislation is that the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum has been entirely entered into the database. And so students will usually find a one-to-one match. But there will be differences from one school to another, and it depends on the strengths of the faculty in a given department or the particular ability of the faculty in a department to offer certain courses and how they've chosen to construct certain courses, too. So those are the main reasons for difference. And certainly not all of our institutions offer the same programs, the same, and have the same departments.
Okay. Thank you.
And follow up on that, Ms. Milne. I have some data here that shows that Century College has an acceptance rate of 97.1% from a total pool of 24,141 credits sent, whereas North Hennepin Community College has a 61.1% transfer percentage off of 23,000 credits sent. That's a pretty large disparity.
Yeah, it is. Now, excuse me, Chair Bonoff, can you point me to the data you're looking at? Sorry.
There's some handouts there.
Okay, sure.
Oh, all right.
Perhaps our page will.
All right. Thank you.
Get you that. Thanks.
Well, Chair Bonoff, I think.
Having been president of both of those institutions.
As the former president of North Hennepin Community College, I wonder if that's a coincidence. I'd just like to say, I think, in my understanding of the transferology, if this is based on the transferology tool, that would depend on the specific courses that the student took prior to making a so I'm unable to comment unless I knew. It might well be that the student took courses that are a good fit with what Century offers, and the Century has a program in forensics, then maybe North Hennepin doesn't, and so a higher percentage isn't taken to be a grade for the institution, but more about the fit for the student based on the courses that student took.
Got it. Thank you. Can you tell us, on average, what percentage of those who transfer to MNSCU and get denied go through an appeals process?
Chair Bonoff, I'm afraid I can't tell you that. We don't know at the campus level what the numbers of appeals are and what the percentage of successful resolution of those appeals is. We do know from the student survey that about 55% of all appeals are resolved completely for students. So they appeal and their credits are completely granted. Another 30% of students told us that their appeals are partially resolved on decision. Oh, this is it.
So this is pulled from their dashboard. Yeah, so my staff actually went to your dashboard to get the data.
Thanks.
So it looks like only about 10% of transfer students go through the appeals, and it does seem as though that many students are successful who go through the appeals process, but it's such a small number. Do you have any sense in terms of the credits that are accepted versus not accepted, whether or not those students are students who are getting state grant funding?
No. I'm sorry, I don't have any such sense.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to Senator Pratt's point, is it possible for a four-year institution? Let me back up. Is it possible that credits from a two-year technical or community college for a specific course would possibly transfer into one four-year university, but not another?
Chair Bonoff, Senator Miller, it might be depending on how a course is configured, you might have an example of a one course for A&P at one university that might be a five-credit course. I'm making up the numbers because that's how they've determined to set up the curriculum as one course. It might be two courses somewhere else, and so if a student took two or three credit A&P course and wanted to transfer into a university that for which that was a five credit course, then that might be a different experience from one university to another, depending on how the university structured its curriculum.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Miller.
To the testifier, is there any work being done to try to make that a more smooth transition from a two-year technical or community college into a four-year university, so there's some consistency across the system, so we don't have that issue?
Chair Bonoff, Senator Miller, there
Joe
are
Brian.
Articulation agreements that individual colleges will work out with universities to make it a smooth pathway. I personally would not want to see every university construct its curriculum exactly the same. Some universities have faculty with an expertise in some area, and so their curriculum would be different to reflect the unique interests of the faculty and their expertise. It may be different based on the community that that university serves and the business and industry and community groups that, that surround that community. And so I think our system thrives because of the uniqueness of our colleges and universities. And so I tend to not see a sort of universe, everyone being the same as being the solution. What I think is the solution is to have tools that allow students to plan effectively and be able to predict, if I take this here and if I want to go here, here's what I can expect.
And if I may, Senator
Bond, Ms. Miller,
I'd like to go back to your earlier question about asking about the disparity in acceptance rates between institutions, where the examples you cited between Century College and North Hennepin, Century College has both technical and community liberal arts majors and programs, rather, and North Hennepin is a community college that may not have as many technical or career and technical education programs. Those career and technical ed programs tend to be where a lot of transfer disparity occurs, because students who prepare in one of those fields may find that those credits simply are not transferable to another institution because they don't offer similar programs, or because the student has changed direction in the kind of program that they're pursuing after or before a career and technical program.
Chair Banoff, as a footnote, I can also tell you that this, as not reflected in the testimony and the presentation I gave, actually every president's, as part of their performance evaluation, are looking at that credit transfer rate, and I guarantee you that the North Hennepin percentage is much higher in the next reported year than this. It was something that, because through the Smart Transfer Plan, we drew attention to things like that, it's garnered a lot more attention and action at individual colleges and universities.
And actually, Mr. O'Brien, the Twin Cities Hennepin Technical, I'm sorry, is 30%, so really low.
And again, Chair Bonoff, Linda Milne was pointing out that that's a great example, because those are three distinct institution types. One is a standalone community college, the other is a standalone technical college, and the other is a comprehensive community and technical college. So I do think that some of the percentage differences you're seeing are a result of the mission.
Well, you know, you spoke, Mr. O'Brien, about the difference in faculty and how important that is to, you know, to this whole equation. And I guess what I would say is, with all due respect, that I look at the opportunity cost for students, and that's where, you know, our committee's focus is on. And so the average debt load of our students is climbing. It climbed again this year.
Yes.
So it's over 30,000. And when we did our statewide tours, we had students come to the microphone on this issue and shed tears. So it's a very serious issue, and so I hear that you're making progress, but when we dig into the details that are found on your dashboards, we are concerned.
Chair Bonoff, if you look at the chart that is in your materials, if you want to advance to it, we hear the same stories, I was an academic vice president, and I was responsible for handling appeals, and those stories are out there, and that's why you're seeing such a high percent of the appeals process, is because our colleges and universities want to serve these students. And each of these stories, these are not cases of, you know, it should be this very, very clearly, it should be that. A lot of these are very, very gray cases where the stories are painful, and we make every effort to track them down. I could give you example after example of some of these stories. One might be a student you hear about who took a degree program 15 years ago and then wants to go back and finds out, which is appropriate, that there's a recency requirement. And so computer courses you took 15 years ago do need to be retaken. And those are painful stories, and the students are genuinely upset, but it is a valid policy that our colleges and universities have, that if we're going to give a degree, it needs to be recent. And so I would just urge the committee to understand that sometimes you'll hear a story that sounds outrageous, and sometimes there is a little more validity to it than it might originally seem. This chart is our attempt to try to estimate the number of transfer issues that are unresolved, and it's based on a combination of the audit we had showing the 91% accuracy in transfer and the 2013 student data. And while no transfer issue is satisfactory to us. I do want to point out the blue part of the chart shows 71% of our students are not transfer students and naturally have no transfer issues, that the remaining red brick section shows students who transfer and report that they don't have issues. And the remaining part is a rather small, not acceptable because we want all of our students to be satisfied, but we really are making considerable improvements through the steps that I've talked to you about and the steps we plan to take in the years ahead. So I don't want to minimize and say we are indifferent to these student stories, but we are working really hard to address them, and I think you see evidence of that today.
Yeah. Mr. O'Brien, just a comment, though, on your conclusion. I don't actually come to the same conclusion with the transfer no issues because of the fact that only 10% are appealing, but it's not that 90% are being accepted. Mm-hmm. And of those 10%, 80-90% get overturned, which says to me that if those others appealed, that perhaps they would have the same rate. So we're talking, you know, most kids, because, you know, and most people, they don't think of using their voice in an appeals process. That's just not human nature. It's the exception. And so we're here to represent the concerns of those who didn't go through the appeals process and who are just shouldering the extra debt. But I know Senator Miller and then Senator Pratt.
You go to Senator Pratt.
Senator Pratt.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Just to kind of follow up and on the discussion, I understand the difference between the campuses and the experience that you have, but I do think that we've got to have some common standards, particularly between like universities. If I'm moving from Moorhead to St. Cloud or vice versa, if I have a psychology class, I would expect that credit transfers. Now, if I'm going from, let's say, a liberal arts degree to Dakota County VOTEC and maybe a welding program, I understand those credits may not transfer. It's a completely different issue. But I do want to make sure that we've got some minimum parity standards between universities so that we can, while the student may get a richer experience at one versus the other, at least the minimum standards are aligned to help resolve some of the issues that Chair Bonoff has raised.
And if I may, Senator Pratt, Chair Bonoff, thank you. I think the Minnesota transfer curriculum was designed to address exactly that problem and is doing a good job. One of the areas that we've talked about a great deal as a target for improvement is increasing student awareness of the Minnesota transfer curriculum because we have a very small proportion of students who actually complete it and are aware that it, in essence, provides them with a transfer guarantee. We want to increase awareness of it, and one of the ways that we're going to do that is that right now we are programming a change in student transcripts, not only to make it very prominently appear when they've completed the transfer curriculum, but something we've never done before, is to show them their progress in the transfer curriculum and make it obvious to every student from the beginning that this is an area of study, an approach to study that they may wish to complete, and I think so force them to think about it and possibly talk to advisors. So that's one approach to solving some of this problem is increasing awareness of the curriculum and increasing more completion of the transfer curriculum. Because outside of very specific technical programs, that transfer curriculum is going to provide the smoothest path for students into any of our universities and the University of Minnesota, which is a partner to that agreement.
Well, thank you very much. I think, you know, now we are going to hear a bill with regard to this, and we'll hear from some students. And I just want you to know that the student groups have been pretty active speaking to us about this issue. And so that helps have it be top on our list, as well as just we have the three objectives of our committee. And, you know, one of them is reducing student debt. One is increasing completion rates. And then one is preparing the workforce. And so this is just top. And so, you know, it's not an indictment. It's a sense of urgency that we want to make sure we're bringing.
If I may, Chair, I would like to say that we take every bit as seriously, and it's in my area of job performance, to deliver better results in transfer. So we're very proud of the work that we did from 2010 to 2014 and feel that we exceeded the legislature's requirements of us in those years and mean very seriously to continue to make similar progress in coming years.
Thank you for your work. Thank you. Senator Miller, you have Senate File 2771. And so, Senator Miller, I put you here first, and then I know there were other people who wanted to testify, and we'll make sure to let you do that. So I apologize for the change in the agenda. Senator Miller.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before we begin, I do have an author's amendment that I'd like to get handed out to the committee, please. And just as this amendments getting handed out, Senator Bonhoff and I teamed up on this legislation, and she handed it off to me yesterday. One of the first things I did is reached out to as many of the stakeholders as I could to try to get this legislation in the shape that everyone was supportive of, and that's what we have in front of us, and I will take a copy of that too, please. So, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A4 amendment.
Very good. Thank you. So, Senator Miller moves the A4 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted.
Okay, members. So what we have in front of us is directly related to the overview that we just heard from Minsku. And I want to start out by saying that I applaud Minsku, what they've done. We've seen some great progress on this issue over the past few years. But as I come from a very rich community of higher education with a two-year in Minnesota State College, Southeast Technical, a four-year university, Winona State University, and a four-year private in St. Mary's University, one of the issues I hear most from students and actually from faculty as well is the issue of credit transfers. And I think although Minsku has done a very good job, we need to do better. And that is the reason for this legislation in front of us. And what this would do is implement a multi-campus articulation agreement that leads to baccalaureate degree completion. So if students have an associate's degree from any Minsku institution and they want to transfer in to another Minsku institution for a bachelor's degree, this would help make that transition smoother. I think the tools that Minsku has put forward, and I know we made some changes last year to try to make that information more accessible to students, is a very good start. But again, I think we can do better. And this is all about the students. That's what this comes down to. Many times students enroll in a program feeling that those credits are going to transfer into another university within the Minsku institution, and they take the courses, and then later they find out that these credits are not transferring, or they'll transfer into some Minsku institutions, but not others. Many times they'll transfer into a private university with no issues, but again, they're having issues transferring among Minsku institutions. So the idea of this legislation is to help with that issue, and again, we're doing a good job, but we feel that we can do better, and we're doing this for the students. So with that said, I would like to allow the testifiers to come forward so they can tell some personal stories on this issue.
Thank you, Senator Miller.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Bonoff members. My name is Jessica Medeiros. I'm the Associate Director of the Minnesota State College Student Association. I'd start by just lending some support to the legislation in front of you, and then I'll turn it over to our president to give some more general testimony around credit transfer. Thank you for the opportunity to support this file before you. This bill would direct planning on the creation of clear transfer degree pathways that do two things. One, create articulated degrees across multiple Minsky schools, and two, guarantee that students who transfer to a university can graduate in 2 years. The simple truth is, while most credits transfer accurately, that accuracy does not always equate to student satisfaction. While a high percentage of credits transfer in a general sense, this doesn't tell the whole story. Credits often fail to transfer as students expect them to, leading to student satisfaction, prolonging time to degree completion, and adding to student debt. One of the primary concerns we hear from students is that credits they complete with the belief they are making progress on their intended bachelor degrees don't always transfer into their intended majors. These students are then blindsided with the need to take courses at the university level that they thought they had already completed at the college. In fact, transfer students ultimately complete more credits to attain a bachelor's degree than direct entry students do. Articulation exists in the system, but in kind of a piecemeal way. There are over 1,000 agreements that are almost all exclusive to a single program at a single state university. Without this agreement, all bets are off beyond the Minnesota transfer curriculum for how credits will work within a major. No student takes a college course with the expectation that they will take another similarly named course at a university later. Other states like California and Ohio have built transfer degrees that get students from an associate degree to a bachelor degree in 2 years, ensuring students take courses that will count toward their eventual major. In the 2013 legislative report on transfer, the Minsky system looked at some of these transfer guarantees and cited them as a practice for consideration in Minnesota. Our students agree, and we would like to see progress on this consideration over the next year. The bill before you would result in an implementation plan next year. This gives the system some flexibility in designing how these degrees could work and allows for thoughtful consideration within the system. While there are exceptions, our students recognize that when they enroll in an AAS program or change their intended major, that they are likely to have to take additional lower division courses upon transfer. However, when students enter an AA or an AS program with the intent to transfer, they should have a clear and efficient path to a bachelor's degree. This bill sets the stage to create this opportunity. Students need clear pathways from our two-year colleges to baccalaureate degrees. This bill would help develop a mechanism to make this a reality for more students. This would mean aligning learning outcomes between institutions to ensure similar program paths are paved with equivalent courses. It would mean developing transfer agreements that cut across system institutions. Most importantly, it would mean serving students better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Charpentier-Berg.
Good afternoon, Chair Bonoff and members. My name is Kelly Charpentier-Berg, president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, representing students at Minnesota's public, community, and technical colleges. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today about an issue essential to student success and graduation, credit transfer. Transfer of credit between colleges and universities is a core function of the Minsky system. And effective credit transfer saves students time and money. Enrollment, transcript, and transfer profiles of students are growing more complex. And growing student debt makes seamless, efficient transfer more important than ever before. Effective credit transfer ensures that students can attain a degree in an expedient and affordable way. Minnesota was an early leader in creating mechanisms for effective transfer, especially in the adoption of the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum, which allows students to complete a block of general education requirements that transfer in their entirety to other public colleges and universities in the state. Today, transfer is much more complex than it was even a decade ago, for several reasons. First, today's students transfer across more institutions than ever before and are often co-enrolled in multiple institutions. I am a student at Anoka Technical College and Metropolitan State University, and before that, I attended Anoka Ramsey Community College, Pine Technical College, and a private university. As you can imagine, a student like me with five transcripts faces different challenges in transfer
than did the transfer students of the past, who usually attended 1 2-year college before moving on to a university. Excuse me, 1 second. Today's students also have different expectations than students did who entered the Minsky system in the past. Students expect that they can ladder degrees and courses from multiple institutions without losing credits or having to retake similar courses. Additionally, today's students are not bound to the traditional notions of occupational versus transfer degrees. Students often begin a program of technical study with the goal to eventually earn a bachelor's degree. These complexities ensure that there is no single fix, no silver bullet, that will solve all of these challenges. Instead, we must engage in ongoing review and continuous improvement of current practices. As our association considers innovations in credit transfer, we look to make changes in two distinct areas, communication and the transfer mechanisms themselves. We have worked with the Minsky system on improving communication around transfer and have seen much progress. A system policy on transfer rights and responsibilities helps to manage student expectations. The Smart Transfer Plan has also aided these efforts, encouraging more students to seek advising, making transfer information more accessible on college and university websites, and publicizing course outlines and the appeals processes. We are excited about the meaningful differences these improvements have made in the experience of transfer students across the system. However, students still face a variety of issues in credit transfer. Nearly a quarter of students continue to rate their experience in transfer as fair or poor. Despite the strides we've made in communication, we believe the next step in continuous improvement is to move beyond communication and examine the system's transfer mechanisms themselves. We are eager to continue our work with Minsky, faculty, and the legislature to improve these mechanisms and the credit transfer process across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your acknowledgement of the progress that has been made, because it was clear in the previous testimony that there has been great progress made. And thanks for your work on the proposing legislation.
Madam Chair, I don't know if we have any other testifiers.
Well, I wonder if we couldn't. Yes, I guess we have one behind you, but maybe perhaps before we move your bill, it might be helpful to have those who were going to speak on this subject come and speak. So, for example, the Rick Nelson and Dr. Nancy Black and Michael Ramirez, if that would be all right with you.
That's fine, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. So, and again, my apologies for moving your order.
Good afternoon,
Dr.
Chair.
Dr. Black.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bonhoff and members of the Senate Higher Ed Committee. For the record, my name is Nancy Johnson Black. I'm the statewide president of the Interfaculty Organization, representing the more than 4,000 faculty at the 7 state universities. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today concerning Senate File 2771 as amended. I will be brief. The Interfaculty Organization would prefer that legislation would not be necessary concerning transfer. We are always in the process of continuous improvement in this area. The Minsky report to the legislature of February 21st bears out this statement, as you've acknowledged. We all have the same goals in mind: to help students attain their academic goals in an affordable and clear manner and have success in their careers. Our particular system is unusually complex in that it contains not only 2-year colleges, and you've heard the variations of them, and 4-year universities, but technical colleges as well. There is only one other state in the United States that has such a system, and that is Georgia. I've advised students at Harvard University, the University of Minnesota, and since 1991, faculty academic advisor and department chair of social sciences at Metropolitan State University. Department chairs are an integral part of this appeal process, and for Metro State, as Kelly has demonstrated, the average number of transcripts that come to us are 5. The record is 19 transcripts for one student. Wow. So you can see that there are some complexities when we talk about transfer. In addition, for more than 10 years, I have been working on the joint Minsky Transfer Committee with student association leaders, other faculty union representatives, and Minsky administrators. The IFO would prefer, as I've said, not to have legislation. But after working collaboratively with student groups, especially the leadership of MSCSA, Jessica Medeiros, who you just heard, and Jason Fossum, as well as consultation with Senator Miller's office, in the spirit of compromise, the amended Senate File 2771 is now acceptable to the IFO. Thank you very much for listening to us, Senator Miller. We did appreciate that very much. We hope that this amendment will be an added impetus to further progress in meeting the needs of all students. Thank you, and I'll be glad to stand for questions.
Dr. Black, thank you so much for your generosity and being willing to work with Senator Miller, and good work, Senator Miller. Thank you for your collaborative winning way to forge that compromise. So we sure appreciate it. I do have a question for you,
sure.
Dr. Black. I'm not sure if you're the right one to ask, but I could have asked the prior testifiers and neglected to do that. We had Complete College America before our committee when we first started our session, and they discussed their guided pathways model to help students, and they identified four key areas: default pathways, meta majors, academic maps, and intrusive advising. And then, in fact, last night I spoke to a group of advisors who were speaking to me from the Teamsters, and many of them spoke of this intrusive advising and how important it is. And I'm wondering, I know that when they were here, Complete College America said they were going to have several meetings with folks from Minsky. Mm-hmm. Are any of these initiatives being done, and do you know how that went?
I am not familiar with all the initiatives you mentioned, but we certainly have had what you call intrusive advising. I'm from the East Coast, so your idea of Minnesota intrusive is a little less than mine. However, I can say that when I sit down with a student, the first thing I say to them is, why are you registering for this course? What does it count toward? What are you fulfilling? Oh, I thought I'd take a film class. Well, that film class is going to be pretty expensive, and it will bring you over the 120 credits. So there are a variety of students, and students who don't have those limitations should certainly have the choice to take whatever they want, but they should know before they take it what is how it will affect their progress academically.
Well, thank you, and we've actually calculated the cost of the missed opportunity credits to taxpayers just to the system, to all on an annual basis, and it added up to $20 million. So
it's really astounding. I would like to know more about some of these programs, particularly the one about the major, because I have not heard about it.
Thank you. We'll make sure to get that information
to you.
Mr. Nelson.
Chair Bonoff. Members, Rick Nelson from the Minnesota State College faculty, representing about 5,000 faculty members in the three unique groups that we have in the two-year college system. And not to be redundant, many of the same thoughts and feelings on this bill we have, so does our organization as the IFO. But thanks to Senator Miller, Russ Stanton from the IFO, and Nancy, we've worked out what we think will be an opportunity for us to move forward, because transfer is big. It is complex, and it is sometimes charged. And we find that even within our own organization, because I believe that some of the transfer numbers you're looking at are probably higher two-year to two-year than from two-year to four-year. And we think that some of those issues are some things that we have worked on since 2010. At my own institution at Century, which I was have to applaud at 90-plus percent at a comprehensive
97.
And, you know, maybe give a little kudos to Vice Chancellor O'Brien. He was the academic VP out there when this started.
Hear that?
But it is, and I think we have made a great deal of progress over the years. And Kelly and the Student Association have worked, along with Jason, with our organization and been very forthright in what they're trying to do and do here. And I always remind them that I am a product of the transfer. I did attend Northland Community and Technical College and completed my degree and went on and finished at Bemidji State. So I know the system does work and it can be completed in 4 years. But with that, we'll just kind of close in saying that it really gets down to the communication factor. And communication can be done in a number of different ways that have been outlined here today, you know, from the students to faculty, faculty to students, faculty to faculty, advisors, or as our statewide president would remind people, the number of counselors 20 years ago versus today may be one of the biggest reasons that we have the dilemma that we have today. So with that, we would close and see what comes up with the vote with Senator Miller.
Thank you very much. And I think we do, though, have one more testifier, Mr. Ramirez.
And Madam Chair, while the testifier is coming forward, I just want to make it very clear, and I thank these two for testifying, but this legislation is not saying that we're asking for all courses to transfer it. It simply says if you've received an associate's, and it's written out here, associate's in arts degree, associate's of science degree, or an associate's of fine arts degree from a system college, that will transfer in to one of the other organs or one of the other institutions that has the articulation agreement. So we're not saying that all credits must transfer. It's if you get an associate's degree, you can transfer in, and those credits will go toward your bachelor's degree.
Thank you. Mr. Ramirez.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff and members. Good afternoon. I'm here to testify kind of on the MidSCU's report as a whole. My name is Mike Ramirez. I'm the Vice Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm currently interning with the City of Bloomington Parks and Rec Division and will be graduating with a baccalaureate degree in Recreation, Parks, and Leisure Services from Minnesota State University Mankato this May. I obtained my Associate of Arts degree from Normandale Community College prior to transferring to MSU Mankato. My transfer experience was a positive one, with my credits transferring as I expected them to. I do know that some students are not so lucky and have run into difficulties as they transfer from one MinSCU institution to another. However, we have been working with MinSCU to improve the transfer process in recent years, and I believe that we are continuing to make progress on this important issue. In 2010, we worked with MinSCU and the Minnesota State College Student Association to survey transfer students. These results helped us to identify specific issues to focus and work on. Therefore, the Smart Transfer Plan was developed as a part of the system's work on credit transfer. It is our understanding that this plan will continue to be revised in an effort to continually improve the transfer process within the system. A few of the successful outcomes of the Smart Transfer Plan include: a transfer rights and responsibilities policy was written to more clearly define both the responsibilities of students and colleges and universities, as well as appropriate expectations for credit transfer. System policy was written to ensure that course outlines exist and can be accessible to students and used for transfer evaluations. The system office and campuses have worked toward better and clearly communicating to students about how courses transfer and course equivalencies, including improvements to USELECT, now evolving to transferology. Work has been done to increase awareness of the appeals process available to students regarding transfer. Credit transfer is not perfect, and while it has worked well for some students, like myself, others have struggled with their transfer from one institution to another. There is more work to be done on the regards to the transfer process. We are committed to continuing our work with MinSCU, faculty, and others to improve the student transfer experience moving forward. Chair Bonhoff and esteemed committee members, I greatly appreciate your time today and will stand for any questions.
Thank you, and congratulations for now having a job in your field. And
thank you.
Yeah, that's great. Are you enjoying it?
I love it. I wake up every day loving it.
That's great. Good to hear. So, any questions for Mr. Ramirez?
I'm sure there's not very many of us left.
But we're engaged, so it's okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. It's the quality of the listening.
That's right.
Senator Miller.
Senator Bonhoff and members, I move Senate File 22771 to pass. And are we going to dual track it? So are we going to the floor? Yep. And
absolutely.
For possible
as amended,
inclusion?
Right? As amended.
As amended.
Very good. So Senator Miller renews his motion 2771 as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is passed.